On this episode of Still Loading, take a shot for the word heart.
Or darkness.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. This episode is another episode within the summer of PlayStation 2, and we are talking about Kingdom Hearts 2 today. You may remember a while ago I did an episode on the original Kingdom Hearts with my friend Sarah. She was unable to come back for this one, but with me today, first-time guest on the show. Her husband has been on numerous times, but first-time guest on... Well, technically, you were on kind of before. You did some voice work
for Driana. Hi, Driana here. Hello, everyone.
Thank you for coming onto the podcast today. Yes, so you were on once before. You were on the Still Loading Storytime episode. You and Andrew actually did a ton of work on that just because I sent you a bunch of video game manuals over email, and I remember you guys said you went out to your car because it was like more padded. Yep. It was easier to get a better audio, clear audio, and you guys just went crazy with it.
We sure did. It was in our car in the middle of, I think, the winter, just like windows up, cell phone in hand, and the only thing I remembered was Barbie.
Yes, you did a Barbie one, and also, oh my God, I don't remember them all. You sent me like 8 or 9 of them, though. It was great. But I have you on for Kingdom Hearts 2 because you requested it, and I'm actually happy you requested it because I've been wanting to do Kingdom Hearts 2 for a while now, and I was actually going to try to make this like a big episode, have you and Sarah on it, but like I said, Sarah couldn't make it this time, mainly because, unfortunately, COVID and everything. Mm-hmm. But we're going to be talking about Kingdom Hearts 2 today, so... But before we dive into that, what I've been asking everyone is, what is your earliest memory of the PlayStation 2, or when did you first experience, or when did you first get a PlayStation 2?
First of all, just correct me real quick. What year did it come out?
2000.
2000.
That's why it's the 20th anniversary of PlayStation 2.
Okay, so it came out in 2000. So I think my first memory was probably, I'm going to say 2002? 2002. I think that sounds about right.
Okay.
By then, there's probably more games available too.
I think the first Kingdom Hearts came out in 2002 as well.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
You might have had it. You might have been able to get that then.
Yeah. So my earliest memory of the PlayStation 2 was not mine. It was my stepbrother's. He got it for Christmas, and I got to have the benefit of being around him and playing it and things like that. And I remember just like some racing games and just like lots of wrestling games. Kingdom Hearts didn't come till a few years later for me, though.
Were you into any of those early games, or was it just kind of like, oh, that's stuff my brother plays, and or did you get into it because your brother played it?
I think it was mostly like a little bit of envy, like, ah, you have shiny new system, I want to play as well. It was probably mostly that. I don't think it was so much in that time that the video games hooked me. It was just shiny new toy, and like, to throw my age out there a little bit, like in 2001, 2002, I was in the first grade, so I was a child.
I keep forgetting you're younger than me by a number of years. All right, that's awesome though. That I've said before, I got it for Christmas one year, but didn't know. I'm going to paraphrase it because I said it the first episode, but we got a DVD for Christmas, and I was like, oh, that's cool, and I didn't think anything of it. And my mom's like, no, look at that, and I go, yeah, it's a DVD. Wait a minute, because we didn't have a DVD player at the time, and you know, it doubled down on it, so it doubled down as a PS2 or a DVD player and a video game machine.
Nice.
So that's how I got mine. But so what made you pick Kingdom Hearts? I would assume, like, describe your because we were talking off mic about it, you have a very love-hate relationship with the series.
Oh my God.
So what made you pick Kingdom Hearts 2? I guess, would you have picked Kingdom Hearts 2 over 1? 1 was off the table because I covered it before, but if you had the choice, would you have picked 1 over 2, or would you have stayed with this one here?
That's hard to say. I think I might choose 2 over 1.
Okay.
For many reasons. 1 was very much just like the first one, getting their feet wet, making a story, like building the establishment of the story and plot. And then 2, just build it off of that. And there was a huge demand for, like, we need to know what happens, because, like, it had a huge, huge following.
I mean, the first game ended almost on a cliffhanger, kind of, because Riku...
almost.
Well, it did, right? Because I think, if I remember correctly, the end of the first game, Riku ends up behind the door of Kingdom Hearts, and Sora and Riku are separated. I believe it's King Mickey and Riku on one side of the door,
correct.
And then Sora, Donald, and Goofy on the other side, correct?
Correct. It's funny that you said that the first one's a cliffhanger, because... admittedly, the whole series is a cliffhanger.
You're not wrong.
Like, so this is where I get into the love-hate relationship with Kingdom Hearts. Like, one is great because it's like, oh, we really want to know what happens. And we think two is going to answer those questions. Ha! Of all things, it created five more questions and maybe answered a half a question that you didn't even care about.
Now, when you first played this, were you one of those people like me who didn't play Chain of Memories?
Gosh, the chronological order of me playing is haphazard and crazy.
Mine's the same way. Like, sorry not to cut you off. I was just going to say, like, I didn't play Chain of Memories because it was on the handheld console. So I figured, all right, that's not one of the main games in the series. So why would I play that first before Kingdom Hearts 2? I know I didn't know at the time that it came out before Kingdom Hearts 2. And then you find out years later, you kind of need to know Chain of Memories to understand what the fuck's happening at the beginning of 2.
Yeah, so with me, I beat one, I think with my cousin. I don't exactly remember who I beat that game with, but okay. I beat one at some point in my lifetime. And then I actually did play Chain of Memories on the handheld.
Okay.
I did. Like, it was, again, a cousin's. There's a theme here. I don't own my own video games. I just go over other people's houses.
I didn't own any games until I was, like, 10. Like, I know you're sitting in my collection right now, but, like, that... I didn't start that till like years ago.
Okay, so Chain of Memories.
I was like you, sorry.
Game Boy Advance came out in 2004. So I think my cousin got it like right away. And like, because I was a Kingdom Hearts junkie at that point, because I was hooked, I was like, I need it. And then I definitely did play it. But when I was younger, I don't know if it's ADHD or what's going on in my brain, but I didn't like to read dialogue. I liked to just play games.
You know, no story, just all gameplay.
So, like, it depends. Like, with Kingdom Hearts, there's, like, cutscenes and voice acting and, like, some of the things I want to read. But for some reason, Chain of Memories in 2004, I was in the fourth grade. I should have been reading it. I was not. I just, it wasn't voice acted and it wasn't what I was used to. So I was just kind of like, nah, I'm just going to skip all this and just go to the action.
Now, did you like Chain of Memories, though?
No.
Thank you.
Absolutely not.
That is the correct opinion.
I got really far in Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories on the Advance, up to, I don't know who's listening, who's played the actual Game Boy Advance version, but maybe the second Riku battle. And I would argue that Riku's probably one of the hardest bosses in Kingdom Hearts, like, throughout all of the
series. Oh my god, yeah. Even the first game, too.
So, like, I got stuck in the Game Boy Advance version and just stopped. So, like, by all means, I had some story in some context, but little did I know that that had anything to do with the actual overarching story of the whole entire series. I thought it was a one shot.
I mean, you wouldn't be wrong for thinking that at the time. I mean, if you would have paid attention to the story, maybe not. But like, for those who don't know, the story of Chain of Memories is pretty much Sora gets lured into this castle called the Castle of Illusion, I believe is the name of it. And he gets stripped of all his memories. And so at the end of the game, he's placed into like a cryostasis pod. And he has to spend a certain amount of time getting his memories put back together by a character named Diz, which I don't know if Diz is even introduced in Chain of Memories. See, I know he's in Kingdom Hearts 2.
Actually, Naminé is the one that puts his memories back together.
Is Naminé? Okay.
It's Naminé. Diz does have a part in it, but that's why they call her like a witch. Like, she's a witch. She can control.
Yes,
because
she's the one that took his memories in the first place. She feels she has a change of heart. Well, she was actually being manipulated the whole time.
Yeah, she was their pawn. So in Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, like, these new big baddies appear. It's no longer just the Heartless are the bad guys. It's now this Organization 13. Woo.
Which is, like, honestly, I think is a really cool addition to the world of Kingdom Hearts. I think Organization 13 is a really cool concept. And I like the whole concept of of nobodies, which you learn about in Kingdom Hearts 2.
All of that is very interesting, but they just made it so convoluted. So with Chain of Memories, whichever version you decide to play, Organization 13 appears. They're the new big baddies. They all wear these dark black hoodies, and it's like
like the Akatsuki from
Naruto.
Is it Akatsuki, right?
Yeah, Akatsuki.
Okay.
Yeah, from Naruto, yeah. And that creates like such an like interesting like appeal, like who are these guys? Mm-hmm. And but by like the 10th game you play of Kingdom Hearts, of all the expansions, like at this point you're like, just show me who it is. I don't care who's under the hood anymore. Like, it was cool the first couple games, like, ooh, who's under the hood? Now it's like just annoying. Like
when a mystery lasts too long and then you're just kind of fed up with it.
Yep.
I always loved, I forget where it was, it was some Twitter post I saw, but someone said, if you could describe Kingdom Hearts in like a sentence or less, and it's like, Kingdom Hearts 3 is the 10th game in the series, or yes, something like that.
Yep.
And it's so true, because when you start at Kingdom Hearts 2, to bring it into Kingdom Hearts 2, the game starts where you're not playing as Sora's all. At all. You're playing as Roxas.
Who is Jesse McCartney, by the way?
That's who it was. We were talking about that off mic. I didn't know that was Jesse McCartney. And then Haley Joel Osment is Sora.
Yes.
Is he through in the whole series? I don't know if he's the voice of Sora in Halo 3. I don't know why I said that, in Kingdom Hearts 3.
I believe so. I would have to wiki check that, but I'm pretty sure he's all around, because like he started young and like literally as he got older and the voice got deeper.
Sora did too.
Got deeper, which was pretty consistent and nice.
And he was he's definitely Sora in this game. That I know. Mm-hmm. But so you don't start out as Sora at all. Mm-mm. So if you didn't play Chain of Memories,
which a lot of people didn't, which did a huge injustice to the second game. So a lot of people just, they know numbers. What comes after 1, 2, mm-hmm, not 1.5. So,
and it wasn't even called 1.5.
It was called Chain of Memories. So no one played that. And then you jump right into 2 and like, we're like, okay, we're a new character. That's fine. But eventually we'll find out why we're this character.
Why do you keep seeing flashbacks of Sora in a pod?
That, yeah.
Who knows?
So now, fun fact, we can go back a little bit, but I beat Kingdom Hearts 2. And around that time period, there was a Kingdom Hearts manga.
I've seen that, actually. Yes. I used to work at a public library, and they had issues of it.
So I did a little backpedaling, because like I beat 2, and I was like, what was the whole first part of Kingdom Hearts 2 about? And my biggest question was like, why the heck did I only fight half of the organization? And then me and my small brain didn't think, oh, that small game had the other half of the organization members. Mm-hmm. And like, if you read Jiminy's journal in Kingdom Hearts 2 at any given time, like, you'd look up people like Marluxia or I can't remember any of the other names.
One of the other 13 people.
Yeah, it'll say like deceased or like, oh, like not dead, because they couldn't use that.
Or no, whereabouts unknown or something.
Yeah, something like
that. Yeah.
Basically, like, they're dead. And, playing 2, you're like, I didn't fight them. But you did.
It just didn't know it.
Yeah.
It's bad. It was bad at the time. Now fans are savvy enough to know, like, there's no such thing as a non-canon Kingdom Hearts game, with the exception, I would say, of Recoded is the closest.
Yeah.
Which, do you know anything about Recoded? I haven't played it.
I've played every single Kingdom Hearts game except Coded.
Well, you didn't.
It's about Jiminy's Journal. I know that much.
And it was originally phone games in Japan.
Yep.
It was an episodic phone. I think that's such a cool thing. We never got shit like that in the U.S. Which is, we didn't have fancy phones like the Japanese did back in like the mid 2000s. Now we're getting caught up, but
yeah.
But anyway,
so two.
The game is just so confusing, because, like we said, you start out playing as Roxas in Twilight Town, if
yes,
I remember correctly.
Twilight Town.
In Twilight Town, he's just kind of, the beginning of the game starts out slow, just like the first Kingdom Hearts. But the first Kingdom Hearts slow section, would you say, is what, half an hour to an hour? This is like at least 3 hours.
Yes.
At least 3 to 4 hours of just doing random
mini
things
and just running around and like creating like this like little mini story, almost, only to abruptly stop and then jump right back to Sora.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, there he is. Why is he in a pod? Why is he bigger? Why does his clothes not fit?
And why is what, like, it just, I feel so bad for Roxas, because Roxas, so actually, we'll explain who Roxas is in a second. Let's do that right now. Let's kind of explain the biggest, like, I shouldn't say the biggest, one of the big revelations in this game. You learn what nobodies are.
Yes.
Do you learn nobodies in Chain of Memories, do you know?
I think there was a small, like, it wasn't as much like in Kingdom Hearts 2 where there's a whole bunch of them. I think there was like one or two introduced.
Okay.
Because it was supposed to be the slow introduction to Kingdom Hearts 2. So there was nobodies, but not to the degree of Kingdom Hearts 2.
Okay.
So yeah, when you lose your heart,
you become a heartless. Take a shot.
Look. You become a heartless, and if any heartless is ever created, that also creates a nobody.
Well, I think it's if someone's heart is strong enough, right? I believe if nope. Is it every anything. Single person?
That's why you fight the little like common nobodies organization 13. You become a humanoid nobody if you have a strong heart. That's why Roxas exists, because Sora has a strong heart. If Sora was just a NPC character,
Roxas is Sora's nobody. We didn't talk about it's okay. We were saying before, I think that's a really cool idea of the fact that it's almost like it takes, if you lose your heart, what's left over, like the shell of who you were, is a nobody. Yep. And it's a really cool concept, like especially literally, but the literary concept of it. But what was weird about Roxas and Sora is that Sora came back to life, but it still left Roxas as a nobody. And I believe 358 over 2 explores all of Roxas's adventures up until he gets synced back up with Sora at the beginning of Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yes. So, that is all correct. And if a nobody ever gets a heart again, they become, this is canon, a somebody again.
I don't think I've gotten to any the game where they explain, which game does that explain to?
Oh God, who knows?
Okay, fair enough. I mean, it's
one of them.
And it's funny, you may think we're jumping all around, and we kind of are, but the reality of it is that this series has such a convoluted storyline, and Kingdom Hearts 2 is where it really makes it convoluted. This is the beginning of the branching paths, pretty much. Or yes. What? Because Chain of Memories, it's a pretty well self-contained story. Like, even if you don't know that Organization 13 are nobodies, you don't need to know that for Chain of Memories.
Yeah, because the only goal in that game is Sora lost his memories, get them back.
Exactly.
Simple, sweet, to the point, wonderful. We love it. That's all we got.
And that's all you need. In Kingdom Hearts 2,
oh God,
they explain, okay, this is where nobodies come from. Cool idea. But then because Sora can exist at the same time as Roxas, and Roxas and Sora get merged back together, and it's all this other crazy stuff. Like, it just creates all these things where it's like, well, then what would can other people come back from being a heartless? Like, get their hearts back, and then their nobody is just there? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No. Plus, the fact that the main plot of Kingdom Hearts is, a lot of times the bad guys want to control Kingdom Hearts.
The place, the idea of all the hearts of the universe.
The energy of Kingdom Hearts, yes. They want to hone it and be bad guys and use it for their evil, villainous ways. That is the good guys have to stop them. That is the plot. That's it.
But they add so many things in between to get to those points.
Yep.
What would you say is, so actually, you know what, I was going to ask about gameplay, but let's stick to the story for now for Kingdom Hearts 2, because we've been branching out into other games because, like,
much
we've
like
said,
the games, they do that too.
And the other games are all meant to, I feel like the majority of the other games are meant to answer the questions that Kingdom Hearts didn't answer.
Exactly.
Kingdom Hearts 2, excuse me, didn't answer.
Exactly. Like, it should be a linear path, but, like, it's not. A lot of times, like, they create questions, but then they hit you with, like, okay, play this prequel to answer kind of some questions that'll prepare you for, like, the 1.5 game or the 3/4 game or the just so much. So, like, let me see if I can get this right. The chronological story order of Kingdom Hearts is
Birth by Sleep, right?
Birth by Sleep.
Well, no, there's a mobile game that takes place before apparently.
Union X, Cross Key,
whatever it is, that mobile phone game.
Sorry, yes, Union X, Birth by Sleep, Birth by Sleep 2, the Aqua little mini game.
Okay.
That one. One. I'm hesitating because I'm like, I really don't want to screw this up. One.
I can look it up if you want to be
100%. One and a half, which is Chain of Memories. 356 over half days.
Because that takes place at the... if you're going about the game story... Yeah, it's the original DS, right?
Yep, the DS game.
Like 358 over 2 starts where Sora becomes a Heartless in Kingdom Hearts 1. It ends where Roxas and Sora get reunited at the beginning of Kingdom Hearts 2. Yeah, you start off
with Roxas just being like a shell of a thing and not having any personality or nothing. And then it develops the relationship between like him, Axel, and Shion. Not gonna get into that yet.
I've started playing that game. I have not beaten it.
So it explains like why in 2, why Axel's like, we're friends, and I'm like, we are. So that, and then it's technically in between then coded. I'd like to say 2 is next. And then at 1.3.
Well, Dream Drop Distance.
Oh, shit, I forgot about Dream Drop
Distance. And then 2.8, the 2.8 thing or whatever.
Dream Drop, 2.8 is usually just, like, a combination of, like, a remaster of, like...
Well, no, that was the 2.5, but 2.8 was an actual, like, prologue to 3.
I thought that had more to do with Union X.
Maybe I'm wrong with that, then. I'd have to check.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot about Dream Drop Distance. Dream Drop Distance before 3, jumping at 3. God.
And it's, but like I was saying before, Kingdom Hearts 3 is the 10th game in the series.
Yes. So even though I said all that in chronological order, that's the story order. That's not how the games came out at all. Imagine being a young, you know, however old you are at fourth grade. For me, I'm like, okay, one after 1 comes 2. Crap. I mean, 1.5. I mean, 3.75. I mean, okay, prequel. I mean, I got to jump all around. Like, it's so many hoops to just understand the game.
And even that mobile game that we were talking about that's, like, the earliest in terms of the story's chronology or whatever, mm-hmm. didn't come out till like, 4 years ago.
Nope.
So, you didn't... The original game came out, like, what, 02, 03 or whatever. And so you're talking 12 years later, you finally have something that took 2 games place prior.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a prequel of a prequel.
And the sad thing is, it didn't really answer anything. It gave you more questions for, like, the new big baddie that happens after 3.
Or, okay. Like... I still haven't played 3, so that's...
I'm not gonna just... There's several big baddies, and usually they're probably all the same person.
And all stemming from who the big baddie is in this game in Kingdom Hearts 2 to kind of bring it all back. Mm-hmm. All stemming from the big baddie in Kingdom Hearts 2, I believe, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So after Roxas and Sora get connected again, mm-hmm. they are pretty much tasked with going out on an adventure at that point. I forget what the inciting incident, though, is. I guess that the nobodies are tracking them. They have to look into more about Organization 13.
So in Kingdom Hearts 1, Sora is like, you're the Keyblade wielder. You're the only one. Lol. What a joke that was. And he had to unlock the keyholes of the worlds.
Or didn't he lock the hearts of the keyholes of
no,
in
he
the
had
original
to unlock them.
I thought he had to lock
and
them
then he
in
had
the
to
first
lock them
one.
In 2.
Wait.
I might be having it wrong. In one game you have to lock them, and in the other game you have to unlock them.
I'm pretty sure you have to lock them in the first one because the Heartless are trying to get to the hearts of the world, so he's locking those worlds' hearts so that way the Heartless doesn't get them.
See, I thought they were unlocking them because they were talking about how the worlds were scattered and not connected anymore, and
yeah.
Sora was given the task of connecting the worlds, and it had something to do with the keyhole and the Keyblade.
I'm going to see if I can... It's hard to read on the plot thing. I'm going to look that up, but...
I do know for a fact that he was given the task of bridging the worlds again. That is correct. Whether it be locking the key or unlocking the key, who knows?
Because the series doesn't make any sense.
And to not necessarily stop Heartless, but like make them less available. Because there wasn't like that many Heartless around in these worlds, and then suddenly they were, and then Sora's going around like taking them back to where they go. So like when you kill a Heartless, their hearts return to Kingdom Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So... See, I'm not even saying that with full confidence, and I've played almost all the games.
Yeah, so he's locking them in the first one because he's traveling to various worlds and keyholes in the worlds that, when sealed, prevent the heart of those worlds from being consumed by the Heartless. Okay. So that's the first one. But you're second right, one, in the second one, he has to unlock them all.
So what's the point?
Who knows? So yeah, the second one, he, you know, after they get all warped back together, he reconnects with Donald and Goofy, and they have to travel to a bunch of different worlds to resolve the problems that Organization 13 has caused, and that the Heartless has also caused. And then they also add in a third wheel on this, because Maleficent didn't actually die at the end of the first game, mm-hmm. and she's back, and you meet a new villain, which is like the most unscary, like intimidating villain ever, Pete. Mm. I can't be scared by Pete.
I can honestly can't tell you what Maleficent even wants in Kingdom Hearts.
Cause, I don't know either.
I feel like they create too many problems or too many baddies that, and not prioritize one over the other. Cause at first, like, it was like, Maleficent's bad, stop her, but also Organization. And then, like, later in the games, they're like, yeah, Maleficent's not that important.
We got to worry about Xemnas and Xehanort, which mm-hmm. that's, you find out later, that's the main bad guy. Well, Xehanort is the main bad guy of this game.
So there's one bad guy, and he has like 12 forms.
I actually have a note about that. Hold on. Let me bring, I closed my notepad because I was like checking my phone to double check on the keyhole things. But in this game, Xehanort, the final boss, was going to have two additional forms that they cut. Already he had like 12 forms to fight as the final boss, mm-hmm. but they was going to have two additional forms, and it was basically him almost as a giant, like in a city, and you had to fight him that way. Like you just like stomping through, I guess, the, what is it? The World That Never Was, I think, mm-hmm. is where the final battle takes place mm-hmm. in this one. I don't, as dumb and cliche as the names in terms of a narrative sense are, I always like how they sound.
Yeah, they're magical.
The World That Never Was.
It fits.
It's very
vague.
Vague. And also, like, it could easily be fit into like some pretentious storyteller's thing, you know, like, oh, it was the world that never was, or something like that. But, and that's pretty, I think Tetsuya Nomura can be a little bit pretentious with his storytelling. Mm-hmm. I love it. I eat it up, but The World That Never Was is a little cliche, but it's, I don't know, I love that. But yeah, so it was going to have two additional forms, and they were cut for an unknown reason. Mm. Another fun fact, which we'll get into once we get into gameplay, but I kind of want to just talk about it now before I forget. There's an additional summon that was cut for an unknown reason, and it was Woody and Buzz. They actually found their 3D models, not textured, but just kind of like their like little rigs game in the game. Yeah. And, some of the worlds that we go to, as like we said, he has to unlock the worlds and, you know, solve the issues like Organization 13 and the Heartless have done throughout each of the different worlds. And one of the new ones in Kingdom Hearts 2 is the Pride Lands, Lion King, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorites, actually.
Oh, I love it. So we didn't get to talk about the Disney aspect of it at all. So, like,
you're right. We've been focused on Tetsuya Nomura's bullshit. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, so Kingdom Hearts, like, is heavily, like, mixture of, like, Final Fantasy with Disney? Huge question mark, and how they decided that.
I know how, if you'd like to know.
Go for it.
So I did mention this in the first episode, so for those who have listened to it, sorry for repeating, but for Driana, as well as anyone else who has not heard, I got this from Did You Know Gaming. I'm not smart enough to find the research on my own. They did it for me. Basically, what happened was that they were trying to figure out, after Final Fantasy VII came out, they also saw Super Mario 64, and the people at Square were just blown away by it. They really wanted to create a world like Super Mario 64, and they didn't know how to do that. I mean, they could figure it out, but they were talking about it like, it's going to be really difficult because we don't have a mask. We don't have a character like Mario. We don't have a character that has a big world recognition as Mario. And they were kind of musing like, well, the only other ones that we would know would be Mickey Mouse. Like, Mickey Mouse is the only person that could really stand up to Mario. Mm. Well, at the time, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, when the game started development, Disney and Square shared an office in Japan. Like, Disney of Japan shared the same office space. So during an elevator ride up, they pitched it to Disney. They pitched it to Disney in the elevator in Japan. And Tetsuya Nomura liked it, like, overheard. I don't think he overheard the pitch, but he overheard basically them talking about, like, oh, the only person we could get would be, like, only thing big enough would be Mickey Mouse, and he just wanted in whatever it was. And that's pretty much how Kingdom Hearts was born.
Wow.
Right?
Nice.
And it was just because they pitched it to Disney, and they just happened to be in the same office, so they were able to combine the two. And originally, it was not going to be as heavily Final Fantasy-ized. It was going to be much more just straight Disney, but they wanted to kind of appeal to the Final Fantasy players. So, I think Mickey was going to be the main character, or like one of the Disney characters was going to be the main character within Kingdom Hearts. Mm-hmm. But to appeal to the Final Fantasy fans and also to make it kind of stand out, they made it a Final Fantasy-esque character, and that's why Sora was born. Mm-hmm. But Sora, if you notice, is dressed like a Mickey Mouse in that first game. Red shorts, mm-hmm. yellow shirt type, or yellow vest.
Yellow shoes.
Yellow shoes, that's it. Yellow shoes. And he kind of has like a black vest on, which is kind of like Mickey suspenders type of thing. So.
And like the proportions are like way off and like cartoony. Like Final Fantasy is a little bit more like realistic and I guess, unless depending on the version you play. If you play the original 7, you know that blocky texture is not realistic, but
they still found time to give boob jiggle to Tifa.
There you go.
Even on blocky texture.
But Final Fantasy is meant to be a little bit more realistic, and then Sora is very cartoony and fun and bright, and that's also his personality, so it fits.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the Disney aspect, like, I love.
I do too.
It's very fun. I mean, it does get in the way a little bit because in the beginning, it very much felt just like a fun Disney adventure with loose story.
Yeah.
And now they've created just a cluster F of just convoluted story that almost the Disney aspect doesn't matter. And, like, I would dare say is not fun. It's not the same magic as the earlier ones.
I definitely agree. I think I actually like the first game the most in the series, which is weird because it has the worst controls.
Yes.
Next to Chain of Memories, which doesn't really have, I mean, that's more of a card game, so you can't really count that.
We're not even going to count that.
But the first game has really awkward, stiff controls. The jumping in that game is so stiff. The way Sora jumps is just so unnatural. Mm-hmm. And they kind of fixed it in the second one.
But also, as you play more in the second one, you get bigger combos, and it's more of a spectacle, and it's a light show, and it's pretty. So like
you dual wield Keyblades.
Yeah, it's cool. So, like, they improve in some areas, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But the places that they don't improve, I feel like, is tying the story with the Disney aspect.
I would definitely agree with that. What are some of your favorite worlds in this? Because we kind of talked about how, you know, in terms of the story, you know, so like I said, after Sora and Roxas get combined, what their goal is that they are sent out by King Mickey and Yen Sid, who's like, not Merlin, but he's a wizard from some of the old Disney movies. I can't remember his character's name in the old Disney movies. It's going to bother
me. Yen Sid is not in the old Disney movies.
Yeah, he is.
I think he's a Kingdom Hearts own, because if Yen Sid
he's in Fantasia.
Is he in Fantasia?
He's in Fantasia. That's what it was. I could not remember.
Yen Sid backwards is Disney.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. I did not notice that. So what happens is that King Mickey and Yen Sid tell them to basically go out and explore the different worlds to find Riku and figure out what Organization 13 is up to. And that is the reason for them exploring all the different worlds.
Correct.
So now that we kind of now that we have that said, because I was bumbling around it earlier, what are some of your favorite worlds within this game that they explored?
So in Kingdom Hearts 2, I did enjoy, like you said, the Lion King, the Pride Lands, because you get to be a cute little baby lion.
He's adorable.
He's so cute, but still wielding a Keyblade somehow.
In his mouth.
It's kind of clunky. It doesn't make sense. It looks awkward, but it doesn't make it any less fun.
And well, the animation they chose for him, I thought was really fun. Even though Sora's holding the Keyblade in his teeth to fight, and he's like just moving it back and forth like that, they kind of have him do a lot of spins and stuff like that. It makes it really fun to watch.
You have to, because a baby cub lion should not be able to wield a sword. Let's see, other levels I enjoy. Okay, people are gonna hate me. I like the Little Mermaid level. A lot of people hated it because it had nothing to do with fighting. Because like in Kingdom Hearts 1, you go to Atlantica.
Yeah.
And it's more of the regular system. You fight Heartless. You go through.
It's a rhythm game in this one, right?
Pretty much. It's a rhythm game. Yeah.
I'm actually with you on that. It's not my favorite, but I don't hate that. Yeah.
It's a nice little break in between doing the exact same thing and like, you know, maybe it's the little girliness inside me like, ooh, songs. Eee, this is fun.
Well, I will say I think it's better than the original because the mechanics of fighting in the original in Underwater. Atlantica is not fun. Used to it, but it's such a it's not a breath of fresh air. It's like getting shot in the face. Like all of a sudden everything's different. You go, oh shit. But you learn it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It's not even like a steep learning curve. Mm-hmm. But that and the fight in Kingdom Hearts 1 Ursula.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that fight. I hate that fight in the first game.
I mean, you also fight Ursula technically in Atlantica in Kingdom Hearts 2, but it's through song.
It's
through a song based system.
Da, 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 da.
Which I think is kind of fun because like Sora sings. It's like, oh my god.
It's like the cheesy musical episode every sitcom does in their sixth season or whatever.
So that
I can kind of see that.
That one was fun. I'm trying to think of any other ones that just stood out to me.
Real quick while you're thinking, The Lion King, The Pride Lands was actually planned for Kingdom Hearts 1 originally.
Oh, did it just not make it?
They wanted to, but the issue was that they could not figure out how to animate and rig Sora as a lion. They couldn't figure out I wouldn't guess that'd be bipedal, I guess, whatever that term is, but a four-legged creature. They couldn't figure out how to animate and rig that in time for the release. They would have been able to, but they just ran out of time, so they scrapped it for that game and, you know, obviously released it for Kingdom Hearts 2.
Hmm.
But yeah, no, I like the Pride Lands. I didn't mind Little Mermaid's World. I also really liked, actually, you know what, before I do that, one I didn't like was, I didn't like Olympus. I was always kind of bummed that they sent you back to Olympus again.
They always send you back to Olympus for some reason.
I don't know why they're obsessed with it.
I don't know either. I mean, they did make it slightly more interesting because you didn't just go in the Colosseum. You went down to Hades world.
Yeah.
And then you met some more like Final Fantasy characters, like to tie it back into the Final Fantasy and remind you like, we also are Final Fantasy. Remember? And it's like, And you met, wasn't it Auron?
Yes.
Auron. Yep, Auron. And yeah, it... I don't know.
I like Mulan's World a lot.
Yes.
I will say probably my least favorite. My least favorite in... I don't know. I don't like Halloween Town in almost...
Really?
No, I don't like
Halloween Sword? His design is pretty cool.
I know. I think his design is cool. I just don't like the levels. I don't know why. I don't know if... I like it, but I also think it's the most out of place. Port Royal, which is Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
I thought that was so out of place.
It is very out of place. I will say, jumping to 3 a little bit, when because they have a Port Royal in 3, that's just a big flex at look how well we can render realistic humans now.
Yeah.
So I feel like in a weird way, too, that was what they were trying to do. Like, okay, you're used to the cartoony thing. We're really good at that. Let's try our hand at realistic models, but then Sora's also there and he's a very cartoony looking guy. Mm-hmm. So like it's very like that juxtaposition just doesn't work. So I didn't enjoy it at all playing it, but I can see why they wanted to be like, look at us, look at our textures, we're improving. It was more like a portfolio piece than a fun
could see
level.
That and that one also was split up into like 3 different places you could explore, so you would like sail a ship from one port to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to go around, and they did have an interesting mechanic with the pirates, that since they stuck to the story of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, you could only hurt the pirates in the moonlight, which was cool. But there's not enough moonlight to make it worthwhile. Because, like, if you hit them into the shadows, then all of a sudden you're like, all right, I guess I got to run back out and have them chase me.
Yeah. But like I said, it wasn't fun to play, but it was definitely just seemed like a flex a little bit.
I would agree with that.
So, I enjoyed most, if not all of them. There wasn't a whole lot that I was like, I hate this. But I feel like Kingdom Hearts 2 was very much like almost as if just a Disney side story, if that makes sense. Like, you have the canon Disney movies that exist, and Sora in Kingdom Hearts 2 is like almost like a little non-canon, like, fun adventure. It doesn't necessarily have to follow the story 100%. It's kind of doing its own thing, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And I think feel like that was the fun part. It almost feels like almost like a fan game or fan, like, not quite that it's not professional, just like sticking a random OC into a Disney world just seems like something you'd read on the internet. Like a little girl, 13-year-old girl in her room being like, I'm gonna create my own original character and he's gonna hang out with Mickey Mouse. Woo-hoo.
And I could kind of see that. It definitely,
does that make sense?
Because I think that's how I felt at first. Like, Sora feels so out of place in Disney mm-hmm. thing and Disney stuff. Except, well, not in the first game, they did a really good job of blending the two, I think.
Yes.
I think they did a good job of making it feel not Disney, but at the same time, it's Disney enough.
Mm-hmm.
The second game, because like you were saying, they age Sora up and then he dresses a little bit differently. He
and they're like working on the plot, but still maintaining that Disney. And it's like, well, if he's growing up, why are we still staying at this like juvenile? Like, I mean, given he's a fun adventure character, like he's the hero, he's like a child at heart. But like, I don't know, he just almost doesn't fit.
Do you think that maybe? So are you saying like they should have picked worlds that fit Sora's age more?
Maybe that would. That's an interesting argument. Maybe
so like. You know, like a lot of the kid movies, like Pirates of the Caribbean would kind of work because that's a more mature movie. Mm-hmm. Granted, like that might be a little too high, but maybe they could have gone with some of the darker, like 80s themed films, like maybe. Rescuers.
Yeah.
Or like Rescuers Down Under or...
Because like even in Kingdom Hearts 1, you fought the Fantasia demon thing, which just did not make sense as little boy, 10-year-old looking Sora fighting
it
a demon.
It was so random too. Like it had no... Like you don't know what that thing is in the context of the story. It's just something
it's
random.
It's just a demon fighting a child and it doesn't make sense. In Kingdom Hearts 2, if he followed it, I'd be like, well, at least he's older. Maybe more mature? Question mark.
Yeah.
Question mark. Like, I don't know. Maybe like the world should have reflected a little bit more of his growth.
Okay. That's an interesting point. I never... that type of stuff never really... I think I've just always kind of accepted that it doesn't completely match up, and that's kind of the charm of it for me.
Yeah.
So it never really stuck out to me that way, but I think there is a point to be made, a valid point to be made, that like maybe the world should reflect the age of the main character of the game.
Maybe.
And which is like, did you feel the same way when you played Kingdom Hearts 3?
Yes. It very much feels like, I mean, it feels like almost like an excuse that, oh, he's just energetic and a child at heart, so it's fine that he's just hanging out with Woody and Buzz and toys and childish things, which is fine. But like that, it just sounds like an excuse. It's like you're trying to create this heavy plot where like it really matters now. Like in one, it was just like kind of a haphazard plot. Now by three, it's like, all right, we really got this plot down.
Yeah,
down.
Yeah, it's in depth.
Yeah, and then he's going on a side adventure to Monsters and Inc. to just do whatever, and it's like,
So let me ask you this then: do you think are there any worlds in the Disney that Disney could legally put in that they could put in because it's a Disney property?
Oh, absolutely.
That you would not want to see in?
Oh, not want to see in.
For example, I don't want to see Marvel or Star Wars.
No.
I don't think that fits with the aesthetic of Kingdom Hearts at all.
Not at all.
Tetsuya Nomura has said he would love to do something with Star Wars in it. This was before, and that video was made before.
Because they did do Tron.
But Tron was a Disney property, and also, like, since it was so, like, have you seen Tron, like, the original movie? It's the visuals of Tron are video gamey to begin with.
Okay, so it
fits really well.
Okay.
It fits better than Pirates of the Caribbean did.
Okay.
For sure. And if they already put Pirates of the Caribbean in, then it's like, okay, you might as well. But, like, Star Wars, to me, I understand Disney owns it, but that's not Disney. It's not, like, Disney. Yeah. Pixar, I think, has been, is close enough to Disney. It makes sense why they co-opted it into it. I mean, I know Disney owns Pixar, but, like, Monsters, Inc. and Toy Story and all those, it still feels Disney when you watch those movies.
Correct.
And and the visuals are very Disney-esque, especially because now that Disney is doing 3D animation for all their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What's a world that you would want to see?
Princess and the Frog.
figured you were going to say
Princess and the Frog. I almost seriously want to write a strongly worded letter of what is wrong with you for not putting that movie in.
I still haven't seen it. I know it's
what is wrong with you for not seeing that movie.
We have Disney Plus now, so I can watch it. I can watch it.
So for those who've not seen Princess and the Frog, Princess Tiana, the first black princess, she gets turned into a frog. Spoiler alert. And the big baddie of that movie is a shadow man. He is called the Shadow Man.
You're right. That, like, there's no reason that fits perfectly into Kingdom Hearts lore.
And
like, that's perfect.
Like, I don't want to, like, tell you too much of the story because I definitely want you to see it. But, like, he uses shadows, some shadowy figures to help him.
I know he's a voodoo type of guy.
Yeah, he's a voodoo guy. So he, like, summons shadows to, like, help him do his evil deeds. And I'm like, shadows? What's a shadow?
Heartless. Oh my god.
Oh my god. Like, I wouldn't even be mad if, like, they did another Pride Lands-esque level where, like, you Sora's also a frog or something, like, hopping around with the keyblade in his mouth. Like, that would look weird, but, like, they've done it before.
Well, most likely, knowing what they how they handle stuff like that, where it's less of a that isn't, because since Sora's a guy, he can't, like, I doubt they would put him in the shoes of a female character because they've never done that before.
What do you mean?
Like, well, Tiana gets turned into a frog, yes. Right? So why would you play as the frog if that's supposed to be Tiana?
Well, I don't want to tell you his story, but
Okay. Don't say anymore.
So Sora could also be a frog. Donald could be a regular duck, I guess, and I don't know, Goofy could turn into a gator. They hang around in the bayou fighting Heartless, because that makes sense.
That would be a fun world, actually. They could totally make it. I don't know if they have it in the movie, but just thinking of bayous and swamps, you could get one of those, like, swamp boats, you know what I'm talking about, with the big fans in the back. Yep. They could easily make, like, a little, like, open world area that would be super fun to traverse with that.
Or the boat can turn into a Heartless and you fight the boat, because that's also a theme. You fight several boats in Kingdom Hearts.
There's one of those boat ships in the Peter Pan worlds.
Yep. Ansem in one turned into a boat. And you kill him.
Yes, he did.
He turned into a giant boat. And then in Kingdom Hearts 2, he's not quite a boat. He's actually a building. No, it is a boat. He's a boat, and he sits on a throne, and you have to fly to him.
You have to. Kingdom Hearts 1, I remember counting, it's like 13 different forms or some shit like that. Pretty much. Is so many that you have to fight. Just, oh my god. It's such a long finale in that game. Mm-hmm. Kingdom Hearts 2, I think, was good because they didn't have, like, the finale was tough, but it wasn't like 13 different forms like Kingdom Hearts. It was still a lot.
It was on par, I would say. Given I beat that game at like 2 a.m. on a school night, and I borrowed it from a friend, so I was trying to get it back the next day. And like a fool, I thought there would be another save point, and then there never was. So I just had to beat the game right then and there. And it's not easy, so I'm like,
it's a long game.
Crap. Like, it was the middle of the week. It wasn't even anywhere near a weekend or a rest day for school. And yeah, so, but I did. I beat it, and Xemnas is dead.
And actually, I'm happy you mentioned that specifically, because I wanted to kind of talk about the ending of the game. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I really liked about this game is it kind of revealed a couple different plot twists. One, you found out throughout the course of the game, and you figuring out what Organization 13 is and whatnot, is you find out that the leader of Organization 13 is this man named Xemnas. And Xemnas is the nobody of Xehanort. Now, up until that point, you didn't know who Xehanort was, though, because you find out later that the Ansem that you fought at the end of Kingdom Hearts 1 wasn't really Ansem. He was just posing as Ansem.
Correct.
And it was Xehanort.
He is the Heartless of Xehanort.
He's the Heartless of Xehanort.
Yes. So you do figure out a little bit who Xehanort is if you collect the collectibles in Kingdom Hearts 2. There's these journal entries, and you could read all of them. And as we said earlier in here in the podcast, I didn't like to read when I was younger because I guess I was just lazy. And that's a lot of entries to read.
Well, I mean, you were what, in fourth grade?
Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, I think, in 2007?
2005.
Five?
Yes. I looked it up, actually.
Wow. I definitely played it in middle school, though. So I was like,
I mean, it doesn't mean that you played it in 05. I didn't beat Kingdom Hearts 2 until, like, 2 years ago. I played it, like, a while ago, but I never beat it. Yeah, so it originally came out in 2005 in Japan, 2006 in North America.
So I played in 2007, so ish, maybe six, around that time. Yeah, so there's, oh god. So the main big baddie that they're trying to tell us is the main big baddie is Xehanort.
Who is the nobody. Oh, sorry, no, Xehanort. Oh, I'm sorry.
So the main bad guy is Xehanort. He's an old bald guy.
Yes.
I'm just going to say that. In Kingdom Hearts 2, that big baddie of just two is Xemnas.
His nobody.
His nobody.
Yeah.
So empty heart, no heart inside of him. He is an empty shell with long silver hair and brown skin.
And you find out the real Ansem is Diz, who's been this guy that's been kind of guiding you along. He's been your guiding force throughout Kingdom Hearts 2.
He is Ansem the Wise. So Xehanort's nobody, and I'm sorry, Heartless,
is the boss Ansem, of the first game.
The brown, long-haired, silver-haired guy with the Heartless logo on his chest.
From the first game. Yes. Yes. That is, that his, the Heartless version of Xehanort is Ansem, the Ansem, the final boss from the first game. He just called himself Ansem to confuse the shit out of you.
Yeah, and if you got confused by that sentence in any kind of way, welcome to Kingdom Hearts.
Oh my god. I think this has been a great episode just because we've delved so far into it. I know we've kind of gone all over the place, but I'm really enjoying like dissecting this because I feel like Kingdom Hearts is the type of thing where it's, you have to create a church for it, because what Christians do where they meet every Sunday and dissect the Bible, we need to meet every fucking Thursday so we can dissect Tetsuya Nomura.
Pretty much.
And we can figure out what's happening here.
Darn much. So yeah, not going too far toward three, but like, yeah, so Xehanort is the main bad guy, and then in two, his nobody is the guy that you need to beat for reasons.
Yeah. And that's pretty much how the game ends, and you defeat Xemnas.
And yes, you do defeat him.
And you defeat Xemnas, and I believe at the end of Kingdom Hearts 2, I think there's like an end credits cutscene where you can see what kind of was like the teaser, not the trailer, but like a nice pre-rendered CG thing of the War of the Keyblades, which was Birth by Sleep.
Yes. And which everyone thought at that time was like, Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah.
It's like, just kidding. It's a prequel.
Well, and they did the same thing at the end of 1 with like the cool battle with like, it's where you first see someone dual wielding Keyblades and he jumps down. It was in the world of, oh my god, the world that never was.
That
and
was technically...
It was just a tech demo. It had nothing to do with anything.
That, apparently, I would argue, is a 356 over 2 days...
They actually mentioned that on the video I saw, too. You're right.
Yeah, because that scene happened in that game.
Okay.
So, like, I don't think they originally meant for that to be the teaser for that game. It just ended up that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they retcon everything so many times. And like you said, in the first game, they tell Sora he's the only Keyblade Master, which...
And he's the only one who can wield it.
And you find out...
And then you find out in a prequel that's supposed to set up the story of Sora, like, there's a Keyblade War. And I'm like, if Sora's the only Keyblade wielder, why is there a Keyblade War? And it's not like the Keyblade War like completely abolished all Keyblades and now Sora is the only one who can wield one. No, like, I think they completely forgot that that's how they started.
Also have Riku be able to use Sora's Keyblade in the first one, though. So I wonder if they kind of like, well, you know, he wasn't the only one who used it in the first game, so maybe it's okay if we retcon that. I don't know, though.
Well, in one, they explain that the Keyblade chooses its wielder, so like that was their excuse. But like they were trying to say that was the only one, but then Mickey appeared and also had one,
and in the first one too, right?
And then Riku got his own, which was in the shape of a bat wing.
I don't know. I do like the Keyblade designs. That's some of my favorite aspects of the series. I love all the different looks of the Keyblade stuff.
I remember so well in middle school, like me, I'm an artist, so I draw a lot, and me and my art friends would just make our own Keyblades.
I actually have the original Keyblade back there. It's made out of wood. I can bring it out. It's hidden behind the boxes. I don't know if you can see it,
but
it's back there. I was at the Ren Fair last year, and they had a stand. Someone had all these Keyblades from Kingdom Hearts. I was really surprised. Like, they had a ton.
I've seen those.
It was kind of cool. Okay, are there any things that we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about? That's any notes or like topics about Kingdom Hearts 2 that we didn't really get to? Because we talked, oh, actually, you know what? I have one. Biggest differences in terms of gameplay between number 1 and number 2.
Smoothness.
Yes.
It is definitely smoother. Like you said earlier, in 1, Sora kind of just like jumps and it's kind of unnatural and just clunky and ugh.
Just unfun.
And if he does eventually learn glide, which helped.
And then that made it fun too, because you could start from somewhere real high and just kind of like shimmy on down.
Yeah, so glide helps at 1, but like just the jump button in general, in the ha, and that's all you do.
There's no combos for it.
Nope, it's just that 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
I liked how there was different, like almost like special limit breaks type of things. Like you could use, depending on which one you wanted to use, you could use
different forms.
Yeah, the Valor form, the
Wisdom,
and I forget what the third one was. There was 3 different ones, I believe.
The blue, red, and yellow.
Which is like based off of kind of what the original game was like when you first start off, and you can choose between like
magic, strength, or shield or whatever.
Yeah. Mm, yep. So it was kind of like that. So there was a magic one, which was the blue one. The red one was Valor, which was like all like physical offense attack. Mm-hmm. And then I think the yellow one was more like support or something like
defense-ish.
That.
Defense-ish. Yeah. And then there was the hidden one, anti-Sora.
I don't know if I got that actually. Ooh. Is it hard to get though?
It's not necessarily hard to get. It's very rare, but if you are down, like, don't quote me on this. I'm pretty sure this is how it's supposed to happen. When you're down on health, you can, instead of dying, turn into basically Heartless Sora.
Hmm.
And then you're like very buffed and like really strong for a brief time, but it's not like it gives you a full health bar of health. It just like gives you like a little notch, and it's like it gives you almost a second chance at life.
Okay.
And it doesn't last all that long, because eventually you come out of it and you go back to regular Sora, and then hopefully, like, back when you're regular Sora, you can realize I can use cure or heal.
Yeah, or an item or something like that.
It's like a second chance at life, pretty much.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. I will say one consistent trend throughout the series that bothers me.
Let me just put a quick little side. You also don't fight with the Keyblade.
Oh,
it's almost like a primal, like
claws and shit like that.
He's like hunched over, and it's kind of creepy. Awesome.
Actually, I'm gonna look up a picture of that. Actually, what was it called? Like
anti, is either Shatter Sora or Anti Sora.
Kingdom Hearts 2. Or you could
just search Dark Sora.
Anti form. Holy crap! That's awesome looking.
Right.
That's really cool looking.
It's very rare. I remember. I think I got it like on like what was it like was it Peter Pan World? Definitely wasn't Peter Pan World. That was number 1. Somewhere where I was with a boat somewhere, and then, like, I just suddenly turned
maybe
into,
Port Royal.
Probably Port Royal, and I just turned into a shadow, and I was like, what's happening? Because it wasn't, like, in your Valor and Wisdom forms, you could choose that.
Mm-hmm.
It was one that just popped up, and I was like, did I press a secret button?
That's kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah. And back then, I didn't have the internet to be like, how did I... Well, I had the internet, but I guess wasn't smart enough to use it. Like, why did I turn into a shadow creature?
I was gonna say, I think the summons were better in this game. I think the summons, the summons worked a lot more intuitively. I think they were a lot more beneficial to you.
Mm-hmm.
One, they were fine. Like Mushu was pretty good, but I remember using summons a lot more in 2 than I did in 1.
Yes. I enjoyed, my go-to summon was Tinkerbell.
Cause she could heal you, right?
She was my baby. It was a slow heal. It was just like very small. And if you died, like on a, say, a hard boss, Tinkerbell would die for you.
Not Tink. No.
But like it made it so much easier. And I even have a distinct memory of beating Maleficent where I think I glitched into a wall and took advantage of it. Like, cause like in that area, there was vines on the walls. I like jumped onto the vines, which I'm pretty sure you can't or not supposed to do.
At least in that fight, or
yeah,
something.
You're supposed to like jump over Maleficent's tail and like learn like her like predictable paths. I was stuck on a vine and like got into a nice little corner where her like fireballs wouldn't hit me or her tail wouldn't hit me. I summoned Tink, and if I happened to get hit by like a little nick of a fireball,
but you could still hit her from there.
Yeah. So what I would do, I would like only cast magic.
Okay.
I wouldn't like do
and
a normal
naturally
attack.
Charges back up over time, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
or it was a very long battle because I definitely relied on Goofy and Donald a lot to just defeat Maleficent.
And if they died, then they would just take like 3 minutes and they would res automatically and stuff like
so
that.
So it was very much a lazy battle. It's kind of one of my favorites because I'm like, I'm going to take full advantage
of
this.
You game the system. You figure out how to game the system. That's awesome though. I don't think I have anything like that from Kingdom Hearts 2. I love it when you that type of stuff happens in games where you're able to find something you're like, this wasn't supposed to be how I was.
It definitely wasn't supposed to. Because when I revisited the second time, I tried telling my friends like, oh, just jump on this vine and like it's an easy battle. And like I almost looked like a liar because it wasn't working. And I'm like, I swear I did this last time. Crap.
That's kind of funny, actually. I want to see if I can get the anti-form. No, what I was going to say is one of the things that bothers me about the series as a whole is the secret ending cutscenes. And normally, I like that type of stuff in games. I definitely like that type of stuff in games. But what bothered me about it in this game specifically was that, especially this one and Birth by Sleep, the secret ending cutscene is kind of necessary for you to know what happens in the next game or in the next segment of the series. And I'm like, that should just be something as a teaser that you don't need to know. Like, maybe it's just like you'll get an extra hint that you'll understand maybe who the next boss is or who the next villain of the game is or something like that. You get a hint at who the next villain is. Mm-hmm. But like, if it contains major plot points and major plot elements, it would be like, I forget what Birth by Sleep was. I just remember like it ended up having, because who were the three people? It's Aqua,
Ventus,
and Terra. And Ventus kind of is part of Roxas and some or Sora.
I don't know
somehow.
If you want to dive into that, but Roxas has not necessarily nothing to do with Ventus, but Roxas looks like Ventus.
Yes,
Ventus is the original. Roxas, I know it's so convoluted to explain it.
Yeah, we don't have to explain it. Well, I'll have you back for Birth by Sleep.
There we go.
Because I do want to do more Kingdom Hearts stuff. I have beaten Birth by Sleep. The games that I've beaten in the Kingdom Hearts series, all right? 1, 2, I've watched all the cutscenes for Chain of Memories because I'm not fucking with that. I'm not doing that. So 1 and 2, Chain of Memories, Birth by Sleep. That's it.
Okay, that's a good start.
I started playing 358/2. Mm-hmm. I have Dream Drop Distance, and I actually have 3. I have all of the games in the series.
Just gotta get through them.
I just gotta get through them. That's it. And I will play. I'm probably gonna look up Recoded just because, like, that's not.
Just read it. Don't even watch the cutscenes. Just read it.
That's what I'm thinking. Because it's from what I've heard, that game is so light on story. It's not
a waste of time. At least with like the DS version or the 3DS version, there's some worlds that haven't been in the other games.
Yeah,
I'm not telling you which in case you know you like this world's different, because like you do visits like Hercules world over again. And over and over and over again. So the 3DS one had some that were like, this is different.
Did like in Birth by Sleep how like the worlds were, there's a lot of different worlds in that one. You had like Snow White's world, and then you had oh my gosh, there was others.
You just get to play as like a different person.
Yeah.
And they have a different play style. Like Aqua like fights like an ice skater.
Yes.
She's very flowy and
it was fun. I think Birth by Sleep is my favorite game in the series. Same. That's what a lot of people say too.
Me too.
I liked Birth by Sleep a lot. Not only because I think the story was actually really well done, considering they try to, it's still convoluted, but in Kingdom Hearts levels it's pretty straightforward. It's a good balance of that convolution and straightforwardness. But I liked Birth by Sleep a lot. I didn't play it on my original, on my PSP. I played it on the HD remaster of it, but I still really enjoyed it.
Nice.
So okay, any final thoughts on Kingdom Hearts 2 before we wrap it all up?
2 is a good staple game. It's fun to play. The worlds are great. Like, it's a nice little break in the Disney story or continuation of the story, and you get to play as this fun, like, energetic, hyper main character, Sora, and it's just really good. I just gotta take it with a grain of salt, like, the plot, at least. Like, if you're trying to play Kingdom Hearts for the plot, don't. Just don't.
You're not wrong.
Don't. Play it for the fun and just, like, just ride the ride.
Enjoying Disney World, exploring Disney proper, exploring Disney planets, like kind of interacting with Disney characters. Mm-hmm. And I actually think the gameplay, I still love the original's gameplay. I don't know why. I just find it so fun. Mm-hmm. Just the, it is so satisfying to just hit that attack button over and even if it's just the ha 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 thing mm-hmm. over and over again. I just find it endlessly satisfying.
When you get that dual wielding keyblade, it's like,
and he's like spinning around and shit. It's
like, especially great. Toward the end of Kingdom Hearts 2, all the combos just feel so nice and it flows so well. And it's just like, chef's kiss. Good staple game. There's a lot to say about the other ones.
I will have to have you back on for the other ones because I would love to have you back on. It would be great. For me, I don't have much else to add to it. I think you've said it perfectly. And part of that's laziness, but part of it's also like, I don't know what else I could add to what the points you made. So where can the people find you online? Do you have anything that you want to plug or shout out for?
Oh gosh, I have so many. You can find me on Instagram at Anakotsu, AnnaKotsu. I post a lot of cosplay or art there. I'm thinking of creating a new Instagram for just art because they're all kind of just mixed and matched right now.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a cosplay page on Facebook, Miss Anna Cosplay, A-N-N-A Cosplay, which is just cosplay. And I also have a illustration Facebook, Driana Lewis Illustration. That's more for like my serious art. I have made 2 children's books in the past. And I'm hoping to make some more. So,
can they buy them anywhere? Or they is it just kind of? I remember you did it originally for one of your final projects in school, but I don't know. Can you buy it anywhere?
You could a couple months ago, but I'm revamping my website because you could have just clicked the buy button and you know we talk and handle it that way. But my website is down. It's a work in progress, putting it back up. So hopefully soon you should be able to, but if you'd like, shoot me a message, I can easily.
What's your website? So that this won't be out until the time we are recording this. It is in July and this actually won't be out until September. So,
okay. So
it might, if it's not up by then, that's fine. But just so that way people know where to find it and for when it does.
All right. You could go to www.dreahnalewis.com.
Okay. As for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Still Loading Pod on all of them. If you would like to help the show out, there are a couple ways you can do that. The easiest way for all of you is just to give it a rating and review on whichever podcasting app you're using. Apple Podcasts would be the most beneficial, but whichever one you're using, it helps people find it. You can also check out the Patreon, patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. Check out the network I'm a part of, the Podbeard Network. Go to podbeardnetwork.com to check out all the podcasts there. And finally, the most important shout out and important plug I have to give is the nonprofit I'm partnered with. It is the Bit by Bit Foundation, and the Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals. You can check out more at bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that should do it for this one. Thank you all for joining me for this episode of Still Loading and for this episode of the Summer of PS2. Driana, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I had fun.
I did too. I want to have you back on for more Kingdom Hearts stuff because you know way more shit about this than I do. So I need to have my expert on for when I do this. So yeah, that should do it. So thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.
Bye.